I'm ready now. I apologize for the small delay.
No worries.
All right, that's a little longer. I don't have to think about that Michigan game again.
Yeah, it was not an easy one to swallow, that's for sure.
Well, I did put in my notes just not to talk. I just put it was bad. Let Eric and Russ speak.
Was bad.
That's all I got. I'll let you guys have your day with your team.
You're so kind. All right. We'll do MSU and U of M talk. We do a little Lions and some other NFL things. Plays of the week, game of the week. We're getting into a little bit of a pattern here, so should be pretty easy to predict what we're doing. And then, like I said, if we got time, we can talk a little NHL hockey.
Oh, you're going to tease me to the end, aren't you?
I'm going to tease you all the way up to the end, my friend.
Oh, man, I hope we have time, because I've got some things.
What'd you say, Russ?
Oh, you want some of this? Sorry, we've been talking for the last hour and a half. I gotta go home.
Yeah, exactly. You might get it, you might not get it, Jay. I can't make you any promises.
It's like that State Farm commercial. You want a dollar? Oh, too slow, buddy. Oh,
you gotta be quicker than that.
The stats.
I'm not buying a ticket for the Fire Harbaugh train. I'm looking up prices.
The salt.
It's beautiful. He just a couple steps. Oh, what's that, a bird? Nope, that's me sacking you, the quarterback, who you're supposed to be protecting right now, right tackle.
The sanity.
You cannot say he's as good of a passer as Patrick Mahomes. That's like saying that Joey Harrington and Brett Favre were right on the same plane as passers.
And every so often, they talk about sports, too. Here is Eric Dorsch, Russ Ivanek, and Justin Marcus. This is Armchair Sports Talk.
All right, well, you just heard the opener. You know who we are. Let's get right into it. It's time to talk about some Detroit sports. It was a hit-or-miss week for us this week. I mean, Russ and I are both still suffering. I drank my body weight after that game. Justin didn't even... I bet you Justin couldn't even tell you who his team played this past week, because I know firsthand he wasn't watching a single second of it. Didn't see a second of it. He was too busy watching us suffer. Then Sunday... Sunday was Sunday. I mean, and we're going to get to it a little more in depth, but just leading it off right now, Sunday to me just felt like, it almost felt like the Cardinals game. We won it, but there were so many things that happened that I don't really know if we did or did not win it. It had that feel to it. A couple things in that game I really want to get into, but before we get way too ahead of it, let's get the easy one over with right now. Justin, your Spartans are the most inconsistent offense I've ever seen in my life. You beat Northwestern 31-10, a team that we've all said on this show is just a Mr. Upset. They always seem to be menacing. They always seem to be tough. You went out and handled them. I need you to... Oh, and by the way, congratulations to Coach D'Antonio, all-time winningest Spartan head coach. We have to mention it. It's great. It's fantastic. Good for you. Justin, can you explain to me... what the heck is going on here? Because by my math, you guys are going to lose like 56-0 this week just off sheer averages.
I can't explain it, but what I will in you know, being correct, I told you guys Northwestern was no longer pesky after they lost Stanford. So that much I did know. What State did, I don't know what they're doing. They took on Northwestern. Northwestern was pesky for only a couple minutes. We exposed their secondary. We expanded on our lead. They turned the ball over. We got the ball. We beat the shit out of them. You know, 228 yards in the air, 120 on the ground, and Joe Bocci is really making a name for himself. I'm pretty sure he got defensive Big Ten player of the week off that weekend. So I don't know what they are. And I said it last week. I've given up trying to figure them out, because you're right. The law of averages, we will get destroyed by Indy somehow, but I was more focused on Michigan, Wisconsin. I went back and watched the State game, and I'm not getting my hopes up. I don't know what they are. We're probably going to win this weekend, but then we'll have a huge letdown. So it's just, I'm trying to guarding myself, to be honest. If we're gonna be truthful with each other here today.
Well, I would hope that we're gonna be truthful with each other. I want honesty out of you, Jay. I don't want you to lie to us. That's not fair.
No, it's not.
I want honesty. Russ, I don't, you know, you're the math wizard here. You're the one that figures this stuff out. Can you even, like, is there any math to equate this inconsistency when it comes to this offense? I mean, 7 points against Arizona State last week, 31 points this week. The week prior to that, you put up 50-something. The week prior to that, you squeak out a win. I mean, I'm not trying to be mean to the Spartans here, but this is honestly one of the most inconsistent offenses I've ever seen.
Well, the closest math I can put to it would be a coin flip.
That a boy.
You know? But I would rather be inconsistently effective than consistently ineffective. We'll say that. And every other week, their offense is humming. Just barely got over the over, which we kind of talked about last week was kind of a lock based on their history. But there's no explosion, and I think that's really the key to it. Not a single play in that game went for more than 30 yards. I think it was like a 27-yard pass was the longest play of the game for either team. And I think that's the key to this inconsistency is they don't have some kind of explosive play. So if someone can take away the mid-range stuff, they don't got anything else to tempt them with, right?
Yeah.
So if they can open up the playbook a little bit more, not be quite so, I don't want to say boring, because hey, look at Michigan's offense. That's what boring looks like.
It is.
But it's a little one-dimensional right now. It's been, what, one game where they've had the pass and run going at the same time? So if there's anything that could get it going, that's kind of it, is make a defense think you're going to do more than one thing.
Mm-hmm. Oh, definitely. Definitely. I mean, it's just, I think for me, it's just a little odd just for the fact that Michigan State has some pretty good players on the offensive side of the football. I mean, you guys are definitely no slouch. You got a quarterback that I don't understand. There's no way to, like, the guy throws the ball 30 times, and that's a low, like, passing attempts for him. I mean, that's on the lower side for him, and still only 220 yards. It's just, there's a lot of talent on there, so to see them be so inconsistent week in and week out, it baffles me. Jay, you said it. You guys should win this week. Indiana is not a great football team. But again, playing off those averages, this would be the off week. This would be the off week, and we called Northwestern the upset team last week. Going into this one, obviously, this is a game you should go into with a lot of confidence. 85% favorite. You're spotting 2 touchdowns. Over-under is 44.5. I mean, going into this week, looking at this team, you've got a hell of a defense. What do you see this one shaking out to be when your Spartans take on Indiana?
So I'm gonna start with the easy part of this that makes most sense because it's just math, right? Mm-hmm. First of all, I think Vegas is fucking with us making the line -14. It's like they know Lewerke is the linchpin behind all of it, and if he actually does what he's supposed to do, we'll win. So of course they're gonna set the line with his jersey number. So I've got State winning 38-17. They're gonna cover the 44.5 and they're gonna cover the line. This defense will win us games when they need to, but they can't be perfect every single time. Joe Bocci can't be superhuman great defensive player of the Big Ten week every single week. And the offense is going to have to show itself. And it's not hyperbole. Like, if Lewerke plays well, we win the game. It's very simple. He can't be doing this coming out of the pocket, throwing against his body to a receiver who's running a crossing route up the middle and have the ball get tipped or intercepted. That's going to kill us. We have to be almost perfect on offense, and Lewerke has to play a good game. I think they're going to do it against Indiana because they have not played anyone of value. We have the same record. We have roughly the same stats when it comes to yards per game and rushing yards per game, but we've been tested a little bit more than they have, and I think we're going to come out and win. We'll buck the average or the trend of having this be the bad week, and we'll save it for the week after. So I've got State winning 38-17.
All right, 38-17. Russ, Jay laid it all out for you. Where was he right? Where was he wrong? What do you see this game shaking out to be?
In general, I agree with him, really. It's the pendulum's going to swing back the other way this week, but not fully, right? It's not going to be Arizona State, we assume.
No.
Indiana still is not a good team. They've played one Power 5 conference team, Ohio State, and they got their shit kicked in 51-10. Michigan State, for their half of it, they haven't given up more than 17 points. So Indiana doesn't seem capable of scoring 17 points against a quality team, and Michigan State hasn't let it happen. So the offense doesn't have to be great. I got 24-13, get to 13 with garbage touchdown at the end, because that seems to be the thing when Michigan State wins games now.
Mm-hmm.
Don't remind me.
Yeah, that'll be the reason the spread isn't covered, is because of a garbage touchdown. By the way, I wouldn't be surprised if we see another game where there's not another play more than 30 yards. But a win's a win is a win is a win. I'm giving it to Michigan State this week.
All right.
Nicely done.
Yeah. I'm going to break the trend this week. I'm going to agree with both of you. I'm going to agree with both of you.
Oh, okay. No, they're going to lose for sure now.
Yeah, I'm going to agree with both of you. I'm not going to agree with Jay to the extent that he said, though. I think your trend is going to continue. I think this is going to be an off week for that offense. I expect Lewerke to have to chuck the ball 35, 40 times. I expect the same numbers, though. He'll be, you know, 19 of 40 for 250. I think you're going to get the win. I think it's not going to be to the extent of like Arizona State, where you guys are that close and it comes down to that play. But I think this offense is going to sputter. I think your top tier defense is going to show and it's going to play well. You're going to hold these guys to 10 points. I really do believe that. That being said, I think you're not going to get past 17 points. I just think this is going to be a much more shaky game for you than it need be. Especially when you have the defense you have and you have the offensive talent, that should be stepping up a lot more than it is. So I have this as a 17-10 game. I don't care about the over-under. I don't care about the points you're spotting. I just don't think this offense can figure it out fully and put two good weeks back-to-back. I just don't believe it. So 17-10.
I was kind of on the same page with the two of you until I read today that their left tackle is out for the rest of the season, and he's the captain of their team.
Yeah,
so that kind of shifted a little bit for me to go to where I went.
Yeah, I just don't see it. I just see too many. Even on the good weeks, I see too many missed plays that make me go, you know what? This game shouldn't be 31-10. This game should be a Western Michigan score. It should be 52-10. The way you guys are playing, it should be that. But the problem is, you have a quarterback who I genuinely think has a little bit of a fear out there. I think somewhere along the way in the last couple of years, this guy lost the edge, lost the mojo, whatever you want to call it, and he second guesses himself way too much out there. I think that D'Antonio is just a little too afraid to admit he was wrong here and sit Lewerke down. I have a feeling he's going to, you know, play Lewerke the rest of the year, good play or not. I just don't think that he's going to break that habit. And if you guys keep struggling the way you are, I mean, this is not going to end up being a great season because you're playing the easy Big Ten teams right now. What's going to happen when you got to play the hard Big Ten teams and Lewerke looks shaky? That 18 for 40 is going to be 18 for 40 for 175. And that's not going to be enough to win. So, 17-10, you guys are going to get the W. It's going to be okay. You live for another week, and we'll see where you go from there. But I think this one's going to be kind of like that Arizona State game. It's not going to be fun to watch, but at the end of the day, there's going to be a W there for you. So that's the upside to it. Moving over to our side of the football, Russ. I mean, you say the word. We'll just skip this all together, call it a bad dream, and we'll move on.
Talk about a nightmare.
It was rough. It was very, very rough to watch. This game was tough from the beginning. Justin's Heisman candidate, Jonathan Taylor, 23 carries, 203 yards, 2 touchdowns. Probably could have been a lot worse. It really could have been a lot worse. He was playing great. Russ, I will admit that a traffic cone would have been an improvement from Hornibrook, but I don't like the I don't like the cone they tried to use. They decided to use. 13-16, 128. That's it. I mean, nothing too crazy after that, but the problem is the guy went 13 for 16. He was very, very efficient with the football. which is all Wisconsin needed to be. They saw we were struggling, and they said, all right, we don't turn this ball over. They can't keep up with us. And it was true. Sad but true. Shea Patterson.
What's an efficient quarterback look like?
Exactly. Shea Patterson, 14-32, 219, two touchdowns, one interception. Came on at the end, played a little bit better, but it was too little too late. Obviously, Dylan McCaffrey knocked out in that game on what I think was just an absolutely unnecessary dirty hit. That's, you know, everybody else can interpret it as they want. You have that big of a lead. Explain to me why you're headhunting. You have the game in the bag. All we're doing is just trying to, you know, work for the next week. And you take out one of our top players. The guy, McCaffrey's more than likely not playing this week. You don't know when we're going to get him back. And he was someone that, as the season's going along, we needed. We had no run game. Didn't exist. Dylan McCaffrey was actually our leading rusher on three carries. It was an ugly, ugly game all the way around. And I never thought I'd say this, Russ, and I, of course I want your input on this, but all this stuff I'm reading this week about, is it time to start finding the new guy? I think if this season keeps going the way it is, I don't know how Harbaugh survives the end of this year.
Yeah, I'm not buying a ticket for the fire Harbaugh train. I'm looking up prices. I'm seeing how much one would cost. Yeah, it's early. It's been one big game this year to see, but it's hard to imagine how it would have looked worse. And he's supposed to be a quarterback whisperer. Do we have a starting quarterback on the team right now? I looked back in his history a little bit. Maybe he was just a beneficiary of a circumstance. Had luck at Stanford, right? Had Kaepernick in San Francisco. Well, it turns out he also had Greg Roman, the OC there at that time, now he's the offensive coordinator with Baltimore. Their quarterback's playing pretty good. Funny how that works.
Yeah.
Even in San Diego, he had Josh Johnson, who isn't great, but he's an NFL backup quality guy. And in college, that plays. So it's very, very, very concerning. And we're running out of time because right now I'm scared.
Yeah, but I mean, to make the argument there, I've never been a big fan of the calling Harbaugh the QB whisperer. Not that he's not good at coaching quarterbacks, but if you go across that list again, Andrew Luck was going to be good no matter who was there. He was just he was an immense talent. Josh Johnson, okay, I'm with you. He's good, but he's a guy that's been on 27 teams in 7 years or whatever the math is. I don't actually know. So,
but he's still here.
I'm not saying that. Yeah, I know, dude. But Joe Flacco's still here. Like you can make that argument. Kaepernick,
and in Delaware, he was quite good.
Yeah, Kaepernick. Kaepernick had talent, but in my opinion, Kaepernick is a backup quarterback on most teams. Kaepernick just fit
now
in
he
the.
Is, absolutely.
But I mean, even when he was there, he was talented. He had a lot of talent around him. He had a hell of a defense around him. And I honestly believe Kaepernick was just one of those guys where he was in the right situation at the right time. You have Gore. They had Crabtree at the time. They had enough pieces around him that he wasn't doing it by himself and therefore looked a lot better than he really was. So you can call him a QB whisperer. What's that?
You can say the same. You can say Tariq Black, Donovan Peoples-Jones, Zach Charbonnet, Jesus here, too.
Oh, no, again, that's what I'm saying. That's why I'm getting to my point of saying you move up to the next one, Wilton Spate. Wilton Spate was not a good quarterback. He was just the only option at the time. Moved to Shea. I was excited when Shea came here. I really was. But quickly realized this might not be the offense for you. This might not be the fit for you. You're a great player, but you appear to be one of those guys that needs the perfect circumstances all around you to make it work. You do have all the talent in the world. And exactly that's why I'm saying, if you're such a great QB whisperer, explain how you did it with Colin Kaepernick, but you can't do it with Shea Patterson.
Yeah.
So
exactly.
I'm a little, when I hear people say QB whisperer, you're saying that now off of, in my opinion, an elite NFL quarterback, a couple decent, you know, in the NFL for a bit quarterbacks, a guy who's had more back surgeries. Or was it back or neck? I don't know what Wilton Spate had, but he's had So many surgeries, transferred away, didn't even make it at the next school because he got a concussion on the first play. He's had some good players, but to call him a QB whisperer, there's a difference. Bill Walsh had Joe Montana and Steve Young. That's a QB whisperer because no one thought that Steve Young was ever going to be anything in the NFL, and he's a Hall of Famer. Harbaugh is good, but I think he gets a lot more credit for being that kind of guy than he really is. I also think that Harbaugh is holding on for dear life right now. I don't know about you, Russ. I saw it again. I saw him take the reins from Gattis and say, I'm calling this stuff, and it didn't produce that much better of a product. He needs to just look at Gattis and say, listen, this next game is yours. Call the plays. Do what you need to do, because something's got to change here, and clearly Harbaugh as the OC isn't it.
No. I got a proposition for you here.
Okay.
Go and find the most hyped up beige colored IPA that's out there.
Okay.
Right? Gotta have enough hops that you can like get up in a tree.
Yep.
Right. Pour it into the nicest glassware you have.
I'm with you.
Then maybe add some gin and two or three of the most bland ingredients that you can find. Make sure to drop at least one of them first. That's key.
Yeah.
Right? But they gotta be bland enough to just water this thing down so it's not actually strong enough to accomplish anything. Right? You put all that in the glass, you have yourself a gin Harbaugh.
Oh, my God.
It's disappointing. It's not strong enough to get the job done when you need it, but damn it, I need it to watch this team.
It's true. Oh. It's very, very tough to watch this team without some kind of alcoholic assistance. That's a perfect comparison, or I mean, perfect way to explain how we feel about Harbaugh.
It's also a perfect name for this episode.
Absolutely. Jay, you're the outsider looking in here. Like you said, you watch this game with us. As the outsider looking, as someone who I guess can say they are really impartial here, you could care less one way or the other. Obviously, you're probably rooting for Michigan to lose because it helps the Spartans along the way. But at the same time, you're a sports guy. You are following these teams. As an outsider looking in, what did you see in this Wisconsin game?
Chaos, to be honest. When you go from the storyline of not being able to hold on and take care of the football to what they couldn't do against Wisconsin, it's just pure chaos. And it will lead to conversations about does he belong here in terms of Harbaugh and should he go? And I try to draw comparisons of how the city has treated other guys in a power position or a position of power, like Ken Holland. Ken Holland was extremely successful, but as soon as he lost his touch, everyone wrote him off, and rightfully so. He sucks. I mean, they can't even get their jerseys right in Edmonton now. So when I look at Harbaugh and I'm trying to understand why everyone's out for his head, it makes sense, because then when he goes, what will his story be? Well, he was successful in the beginning and he lost his touch. That's Holland. For him, he never had a touch yet. So that might give people a ground to stand on that it's too soon. But at the same time, he hasn't done anything for you. And I feel bad. Like, I thought it was funny to rub your face in the dirt, you know, before, but now it's just like you're spending how many millions of dollars and you're getting what out of it? So I think you guys are hitting on the same things, and maybe it is a little too early still, but look what everyone's talking about. It's about does he belong where he's at? And the only thing he'll probably be able to say he did is he got players to show up, but he just couldn't get those players to win. So I feel bad. I'm sympathetic towards it.
Yeah. And I, to be honest, I think at least the last 2 years, a lot of it is predicated on the fact that we went from having a pretty decent stretch of, we had talented quarterbacks, but we never had the guy. We never had that guy that you can literally say, this guy's going to go out here, he's not going to make mistakes, he's going to be a great quarterback. Because the last good player we had at that position was Denard, and Denard really wasn't a quarterback. So you talk about the years of like Wilton Spate and all these guys who they were okay. And then you hear Shea Patterson, a guy who was very good at Ole Miss, played well, is going to come here and he's going to play for us. And I think a lot of people went into the Harbaugh's got his guy, here we go. Notre Dame comes in and Shea looks lost for quite a while. And it got somewhat better, but never really that much better. Then you come into this year and Shea can't hold on to the football. He's losing it left and right. There's just no, it really does feel like we can't seem to catch the break of we get the right, what appears to be the right guy with the coach who's going to be perfect for him, and it just still doesn't line up right, and it's just kind of tough. And now it's especially even harder because McCaffrey's not going to play this week, so you know it's Shea. So if something doesn't change, we're in for another week of what we've seen for the last couple weeks, and that's very, very scary for me. We might as well talk about it. Rutgers, Michigan, this should be an easy game for us, but Russ, as we're learning, none of these games are going to be easy for us.
I'm still going to hold out hope that with a 28-point spread, they're going to go ahead and take care of Rutgers.
Yeah.
If not, buy me that ticket to the train to Fire Harbaugh, though.
Oh, I agree. If we lost to Rutgers this week, I think you have to say that Harbaugh's days are officially numbered. Win out, or you're looking for a new job next year.
Rutgers team that gave up 30 to Boston College.
Mm-hmm.
Like, come on.
Yeah. But see, the problem is, as I look at it, the numbers aren't that different. Points per game, Rutgers 21.3, Michigan 26. Points allowed per game, 27 by Rutgers, 25.7 by us. Total yards, it's a difference of literally 11 yards. So, and yards allowed, they give up about 50 more yards than we do. That should never be the case. Michigan numbers shouldn't be that close to Rutgers numbers. That just shows you how far we've fallen this year and how rough of a year we're having. So,
yep.
You did everything but put the cherry on top of it, Russ. Give me a score.
I'm actually going to try and stay optimistic and say 33-10.
Okay.
Rutgers given up 30 in each of the last two games. Got to at least be as good as Boston College against Rutgers.
Okay. Okay. I'm not that far off from you. The 38, perfect. I got him there for that. I'm going to say that Rutgers kicker is going to have a heck of a day and is going to boot through a couple of them. I've got him at 38-12. So that's how I feel about it. I think this, if ever there was a time to say this is a tune-up game that we never had this year, this is that game. This is that game where you tell Shea, listen, you got I got no one left. Any given Sunday, he says it to Jamie Foxx. I got no one left, so you don't got to worry about getting the hook. That's what you got to say to Shea. I got no one. Dylan's sitting in sweatpants over there. He can't play today. So this is your game. Go out there and just fix whatever's wrong. Make whatever you need to make happen today, because this is the tune-up game for us. We need to just pack on the points. We should have the backups in by the halfway through the third. It probably won't happen, but we should. This needs to be that fix whatever problems you have kind of game. So 38-12, to me, that's on the bottom end of making me feel comfortable for this game. Anything closer than that, and you know, the doubt isn't going anywhere. So we'll see what happens with it. Jay, how about you? You got a score for me?
I do. I got Michigan winning 24-6. I don't know if they get to the 30s. I think that's just the inherent, I don't like your school because you guys won't get me up to certain levels. I won't put you guys up on certain levels, but you still win. So I'll do 24-6, two field goals for the lowly Rutgers.
Okay. All right. I'm not trying to hurt your team, Jay. I'm giving you wins. Like, that's the thing.
No, but take points when you take some points against me when you can. I'll do the same thing to you.
Yeah, I understand. That's fair.
If you break 30, I'll buy you a six pack.
All right, that's fair. I'll take that recorded, right? Yeah, I have that recorded. Everybody, yep, that two machines caught it, so we're good. We're good. I'll enjoy my six pack. Because I think we're definitely gonna against Rutgers, we'll break 30. I think that's very possible.
You think so?
Yeah. Oh, I think so. Definitely.
Oh, then we'll do this right. You have a gentleman's bet. You break 30, I'll give you half of the six pack. I'll give Russ the other half because I don't see you guys breaking 30.
Okay. And so what? If we lose, Russ and I have to chip in and split a six pack with you.
I was right. No, just say I was right on the next pod. I'll take that as my. My award.
I'm sorry. When I created this thing, I signed an agreement with myself that said I would never admit Justin Marcus was right. So we have a conflict here. We'll have to talk to the lawyers. We'll work it out. We'll get through this.
Deal.
All right. So two, what should be two wins for the college teams in Michigan. Should be enjoyable. Jay, anything on your Chippewas? I mean, have you been following them super close? You're super excited for their season? They have this really good wide receiver back on campus named Antonio Brown.
Yeah, no, I saw he enrolled in the criminal justice course, and I don't know. I don't want to talk about AB, but he also did put out some tweets today that, like, he's still the best out there, so that makes me think that Central's like, nah, go away. We don't want you. So, I have no idea what that football program is doing up there. I hope the MAC is treating them well. They didn't win a single game last year, so I guess the chips might be firing up. I don't know. I don't know how it works up there.
Who knows? Who knows? No, it's fine. But I actually, as a transition to the NFL, there's one guy who has barely played this year because no one wants him on their team. Ooh. It was announced today or the other day that Melvin Gordon, a guy who they want on the field, who just didn't want to be on the field, is finally going to start playing. Won't play this week. We'll resume next week. Not to get too much into it, I don't really know the details, but I do want to ask both of you guys. When I heard this, one question popped into my head, and I felt it needed to be asked. This is another one of me throwing a curveball. These guys don't know what I'm going to ask. But to me, and I could be wrong here, I'm often wrong, I'll admit it on this show, the Chargers are a not-so-great football team right now. It would help to have Gordon, but one guy can't be the end-all solve problem for a team. There's multiple things wrong there. So I ask you, Russ, him coming back is great. Does it really make that team that much better?
No, and partially because it's not like Austin Eckler was playing poorly.
No.
Like, the guy was filling it. Do they get better? Yeah, marginally, but not having some of the players on the defense that are injured, not having Hunter Henry, having Mike Williams banged up, that's going to matter more. I think just in general we put way too much importance on a running back, but that's a whole different topic.
Second little thing here, Jay, it's the same question for you, but Russ, real quick. Is this the week that Miami gets the W? 0-3 Miami against a 1-2 Chargers team?
No, Chargers will handle them.
Okay, all right. Jay, it's the same too. Is this the week that the Finns finally get something? And, I mean, how much better does this team really get? I get he's a great running back, hasn't played in, you know, over 6 months. But at the same time, there's other problems on this team, and it can't just be Melvin Gordon coming back that fixes it.
See, I agree with the theory that there's more than just one issue in terms of injuries, but I think Melvin Gordon is that turning point for them. They are losing 45-16 in the second half of all of their games so far this year. And I don't think Melvin Gordon will be the type of guy who will, fumble on the 1 yard line when they could win a game. So, I firmly believe that Melvin Gordon will be the thing that turns it on. They will destroy Miami like they should.
Mm-hmm.
But it should be the turn of getting a couple other pieces back, hopefully. But look, Phillip Rivers doesn't have to just do it all by him damn self now. And he can rely on Melvin Gordon a little bit more, and I think it helps big time.
Yeah, then that's the reason I kind of wanted to talk about it, was I think there's a lot more wrong with this team than just the fact that they don't have their Pro Bowl running back. Do I think that, you know, them not having him is going to be the reason Miami gets their first W? No, I think Miami is a horrible team, just absolutely horrible. I'm not already going to say it's an 0-16 team, but this is a team that looks like they could finish at the bottom of the league with no one even close to them. So we'll see what happens there. But I don't see this. You're a 1-2 team without Gordon. I don't feel like the return of Gordon is going to all of a sudden shoot you up to being a 14-2 team at the end of the year. There's enough problems on that team that I would venture to say I don't know that they're any better than an 8-8 team right now, even with Gordon coming back. I mean, he can't run the ball on every play, so eventually you got to air it out. You got to throw it. Rivers doesn't look to necessarily be as comfortable. That offensive line doesn't look like they're doing a very good job of keeping anybody out of Rivers' face. When looking for my play of the week, I felt like 50% of the time Rivers was throwing jump balls because he had to chuck it up there or else he was going to get killed. So we'll see what happens there. They're going to get a W, but Melvin Gordon coming back, great. It helps a couple people on fantasy. Other than that, I don't know that that's going to turn around the Chargers season, especially when you think about the fact that you still have to deal with Kansas City and no one's doing a great job of dealing with Kansas City. So we'll see what happens. The other one, I had this in the notes a couple weeks ago, but I wanted to talk about it right here because way too much is being made, in my opinion, of Lamar Jackson. He's a good football player. He's not the second coming. And seeing them talk about how Lamar Jackson and Patrick Mahomes are the new Brady and Manning, no, they are not the new Brady and Manning. Because you know what? There will never be another Brady and Manning. They're two of the best guys to ever do it. Ever. Like that's ridiculous. That's like saying that they're the new, you know, Bird and Magic. That'll never happen again either. You can have guys that have a rivalry like that, but you cannot have a guy who up until 2 weeks ago no one knew could even throw the football be the new Peyton Manning. That just doesn't happen. And the fact that you're saying it is a little ridiculous. Has he gotten off to a hot start? Absolutely. He's played great for the last couple weeks. But we weren't ready to even crown Mahomes as one of the top three quarterbacks in the league because we wanted to see him do what he did last year again. So how is Lamar Jackson already neck and neck with Patrick Mahomes when Mahomes has more passing yards than anyone in their first 20 games and Lamar Jackson has three decent weeks of throwing the ball? Russ, I need this explained to me.
Well, it's hype. It's obviously, on the face of it, absolutely ridiculous to call him the next Brady and Manning, but it's, hey, we only get 16 of these games for most of the teams mm-hmm. a year, and man, 3 weeks is a long time to talk about nothing. So they come up with things to talk about, and this is the hype machine that it was. I looked into it a little bit. Lamar now has started 10 games, right? Look at Kaepernick's first 10 starts. Compare them to each other. You tell me if you can tell which one is which.
Okay.
Right? 155 completions on 258 attempts. So 60.1% completion. 1,977 passing yards, 12 touchdowns, 3 interceptions, and then 728 rushing yards with 5 touchdowns, 5 yards per carry. The other one, 173 on 286, 60.5% completion, 2,297 yards, 13 touchdowns, 7 interceptions. 367 rushing yards at the 5.65 clip, 2 touchdowns. A lot of numbers. Safe to say, pretty close. Earlier we talked about Cap not necessarily being the most talented. Those numbers are really close, right? And even if you say, hey, Russ, in the last, you know, Lamar's completely different his last 3 starts. You take Cap's best 3, and it's more yards and less a total percentage of his 10-game yardage. So,
okay. Yeah, but who threw all those picks?
Okay, wait. Give me.
I gotta imagine
Give me the passing yards. Give me the passing yards for the second guy one more time.
The second guy was 2,297 passing yards in his first 10 starts.
I'm gonna say that's Lamar.
No, that is Kaepernick.
That is Kaepernick. Okay.
Yeah, because I don't remember Cap throwing. Oh, no, the first guy only threw 3 interceptions, right?
Yep.
Okay.
Oh, so Cap did throw 7. Damn. Okay.
Yeah. Cap, to prove my point. And then in their best 3 games, which happened to be Lamar's last 3, he threw for 863 yards, which is 44% of his 10-game total. Cap's best 3, they weren't his last 3 of those 10, but it was like 7 through 9 or something. 932 yards, which is 41% of his total. So less of a crazy variation in the set, but more passing yards. And one of them we're talking as the truth, and the other one can't get a job. Now, granted, there's some political reasons probably for that, but still, like that's who we're talking about. Let's not put him in the Hall of Fame yet.
No, absolutely. But I think. I think it's more right now for me. Is he a good quarterback? Is he playing well right now? Absolutely.
Yeah.
But I don't think any of us can say that in our lifetime of watching this sport, we haven't seen guys go on these hot streaks. And then, you know, the Lions literally helped 3 guys get contracts just for having a really good game against us. I mean, Matt Flynn got a big ass contract from Seattle because he had 1 really good game against us. So, yeah, I mean,
Matt Flynn says hi. Charlie Whitehurst says hi.
I mean, Fitzpatrick has made a living off of having half good seasons and getting contracts from other people. So, and nothing against Fitzmagic. He's awesome to watch, but let's be honest, he's never been a top tier quarterback in this league. He's just taken his opportunities and ran with him. But I would never sit there and go, Fitzpatrick, Mahomes, the new Brady Manning. Like, that's a little much for me. Especially when, if you're going to talk about good young quarterbacks, off the top of my head, I can think of, like, four that I would put over Lamar Jackson. I mean, can we maybe say Deshaun Watson? Watson, Patrick Mahomes? That's a matchup that would be a lot to watch. I mean, Jared Goff and Mahomes put up 900 points in one game last year. It legitimately was an offensive frenzy against two teams that have very good defenses. So maybe those two are the better. Russell Wilson. I mean, there's enough good young quarterbacks that I think you can pick a few out of the lineup over Lamar Jackson, a guy who's had three really good games.
So the other thing that kind of helps all that too is that I'm pretty sure they made that proclamation before they played each other.
They did.
The two teams that Lamar was coming off of was Miami and Arizona. And then they said they're the next Brady and Peyton. So I was just I don't believe it.
Trash and garbage.
And I thought it was hilarious that those are the two teams that Lamar faced. It's like, well, duh.
Well, I mean, but listen too. The thing is, Lamar's playing well, but to even keep this game going against the Chiefs, Lamar had to throw the ball 47 times. And if I remember the numbers correctly, I don't have them right in front of me, he was in the 20s in completion and like 47 in attempts. So he was about 500 passing the ball, but only threw for, I believe, like middle 200s in yards. So he had a good game. He had a decent, solid, middle-of-the-road NFL game where Mahomes had 340 passing yards, three touchdowns, was very efficient with the ball. That, to me, is the distinct difference. Are you as athletically gifted? Yes, he's probably one of the most athletically gifted guys in the NFL. He genuinely is a person who you could line up at any skill position on the field, and he probably would be very good. He probably would be very good. But you cannot say he's as good of a passer as Patrick Mahomes. That's like saying that, you know, Joey Harrington and Brett Favre were right on the same plane as passers.
Damn it, I am just forgetting Joey Harrington in that awful time.
I'm never going to let you. I'm never going to let you forget it. So, no, especially since you were the one that was like the smart ass who put out the Millen text. That brought back Joey all back to me. Then I had to look at Charles Rogers and Mike Williams and remember how many stupid decisions we made.
Yeah, I'm happy I wasn't a fan back then. Those were easier times for me.
I will never forget the Joey Harrington draft. It will haunt me for the rest of my life.
Andre Johnson. Andre Johnson.
But to be
is that what got passed up on?
Yeah, we could have had Andre Johnson on that team.
Yeah, I tuned in. The first year Stafford got.
Rogers one, actually.
Was it? Okay. Yeah.
Stafford had a limited first year, didn't he? And then Harrington played for him?
No. Stafford, Joey Harrington wasn't on the team by the time Stafford came around.
Yeah. Dante Culpepper was the vet.
Yeah.
I started watching when Harrington was in his last season. That's what I remember the most.
Yeah, Joey's last season with the Lions was 05.
His name was Joey.
To be fair, the number one pick in the draft was David Carr for the Texans.
Oof.
But and we never had a chance at him, but to the guy right above him, Julius Peppers, was the number two pick
okay.
in the draft. He turned out all right. He turned out okay. But yeah, as you go down. Oh, no. Jay, I don't know if this one will hurt you as much. I know, Russ, it'll hurt you and I because we've talked about this guy. About seven or eight picks later, Dwight Freeney.
Who needs pass rushers?
Yeah, could have had Dwight Freeney. Could have had Jeremy Shockey. Could have had Albert Haynesworth. So, just a couple.
Trey, to wrap up this Mahomes thing, you know what my favorite one right now is? Is Deshaun Watson, Patrick Mahomes, and then Mitch Trubisky. And that Trubisky went first before both of them.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Trubisky can't even throw left right now.
that one stings the most.
So Joey will always hurt, especially for the fact that while you were saying that, Jay, I scrolled just a little bit further, and I wish I hadn't, because about 20 picks after Joey Harrington, probably the greatest safety of all time, Ed Reed. So just a bunch of players that are going to have gold jackets on, and we could have had them on our team.
Nobody wants them.
Yeah, nobody wants that. So, but to wrap this all up, I haven't asked him yet, and I've been circling the drain to ask him, Jay, am I being crazy here, or is Lamar Jackson getting a little more hype than Lamar Jackson is warranted?
Talk to me week 8 when they play the Pats, and I'll answer that question because that's like I need to see sizable opponents. I don't want Miami Cardinal and then saying that this dude's a G. Like, I think they got the Bengals and the Steelers coming up too as well in their schedule.
Yep,
it's all hype. I'll wait till Brady carves them up a little bit, and then we'll have a good combo.
Okay, sounds good. Well, let's talk about our team. Let's talk about the Detroit Lions. This, as I said to start the show, this one to me, again, it's a W in the column, but it's just a little tough to get through the fact that this, to me, feels like it was way closer than it should have been. Actually, the only reason we win this game is for the fact that none of their receivers could hold on to the ball. A couple turnovers and some very iffy calls both ways, but this just did not feel like a complete Lions game. I mean, I can't remember the last time I looked at a box score and saw that Stafford threw the ball 32 times and it only added up to 200 yards passing. That feels a little too complete of an offense for me. But then you look at it and we didn't even break 100 yards rushing as a team. So
no,
you really have
and there
to start
was 69 yards rushing in the first half.
Yes.
Well, I mean, when you break it down, Agnew, 100 yard return, there's some points right there. So if you think about it, really, we were only good for 20 points. It's just a little weird, and it was a tough game all around to just kind of feel comfortable with. I mean, Kerryon Johnson, 20 carries for 36 yards. You got to do better than averaging 2 yards a carry, buddy. We need a little bit more out of you. In our trend, we talked about it the last couple weeks, that another guy had a big week. Marvin Jones, 100 receiving yards on 6 catches. Really like the fact that Bevel seems to be going to the hot hand whenever possible. But, Russ, when you look at this game, can you really walk away with a lot of good coming out of it? Or is it one of those ones where you're like, all right, we got the win, got the ugly out. Let's leave that behind us and start working on the good.
I mean, I guess it was another week where I got to the end and went, ooh, other team lost that one, huh? It didn't feel like a Lions win. Now I'm going to take it. And there is skill involved with taking what's given to you when it comes to the NFL, because winning's tough, especially on the road.
Absolutely.
But Eagles dropped 7 passes. And we got to the end of the game, and the Lions couldn't put it away. Right? This came down at the end, couldn't score to finish the game, couldn't ice the clock to just finish the game, gave the Eagles a chance, right? Last week, it took Slay picking the ball off in the end zone to finish it. Might not even have Slay next week. So that trend's got to stop right away.
Yeah.
The only good thing I can really talk about was the interior of the line held up really well. Just couldn't do anything running with it, though, which is very, very troubling. How is half your line look good and you still can't run the ball?
Oh, yeah. It was a tough game to watch. You mentioned Slay. That was actually the first note I had. I wrote this note very early on in the game, and to me it never warranted being crossed out. And that's the fact that, in my opinion, Slay is making way too many rookie or less than his talent mistakes. I mean, Sanders has a big catch on the opening drive. You can't be big play Slay and be our number one corner that we rely on to cover their best player and over the last couple weeks make as many mistakes and look just lost in the way he has. Obviously, he might not play this week. We'll see what happens there, but there's something going on with Slay right now. I don't know if it's just mailing it in because you feel like you've done what you need to do to prove how good you are, if there's something hindering you, but when he's on, he's one of the best corners in the league, and I got to say right now, Jay, he does not look like he's on.
No, and even he did make the big play for his namesake, with the interception, he still had all kinds of other issues with the Chargers. And if we're going to go against the Chiefs and we're going to try to contain them and win a game and pray that we win somehow, it has to be based off of turnovers and big plays. You have to have that play that changes the tides of the games where you're in control. And then you can hopefully do something that we haven't done over the past 2 weeks, but close the game out. I don't expect them to do that against the Chiefs, but if we have Slay, we at least have a shot. Because he's got this name that I wish he didn't give himself But, you know, we have to have the big play. Like, Jelani Tavai, if he comes up, we need someone that's going to actually do something impactful and get a interception at a key moment and have it be a big play. So I hope he's out there. I really do.
Yeah, it's a tough scenario. It's a very tough situation. And right now, I would say the guy stepping up is Okorah. This guy is just everywhere right now. He's playing. I'm sorry, not Okorah.
Yeah.
I'm looking at a name. I'm looking at a name right next to a name. Devon Kennard. Kennard is stepping up tremendously for this team right now. No offense to Okorah. I'm sure you're playing great too. But Kennard is everywhere. He's just everywhere. We're gonna get into a part of this show now that I think. It's treading lightly, or it's treading tough, because we have to try to interpret crazy NFL referees. Because there were two calls in this game that I don't understand, and I just, this is the problem with the NFL. There's too much gray area, and it needs to be fixed, but the problem is they don't know how to fix it. First is, we had a touchdown called back because they called Hockenson out of bounds when, before the ball's even released, in the end zone, the corner shoves Hockenson out of bounds. One of you two, if either of you can do it, please explain to me how that's not offense, or I mean defensive pass interference.
I hate my fantasy team.
That's, oh, good for you.
how far away from the line of scrimmage was it?
I want to say the play was about, I want to say they were at like the 7, give or take.
Okay.
Again,
but still more than 10. Yeah, No, pushing them out should be, although they did put the rule in a couple of years ago, they put it back in that you can push a receiver out who's in the process of catching the ball, and that counts as being out of bounds, but yeah, not before the pass is even thrown.
Mm-hmm. I'm trying to find it here. Yeah, it didn't make sense. Here it is. No, that was the penalty on Spence. I'll find it. But it was just, it was one of those ones where you call the guy out of bounds when he wouldn't have been out of bounds if it wasn't for the corner shoving him to get him out of bounds. So I just feel like it doesn't make a lot of sense as a call, and it's a little weird. The second one, and this is the one that I was fuming when they called it, and Jay, I'll give you first dibs on this one, was the... Jared Davis hitting a defenseless player. He caught the ball. He was on his way down. He would have been in bounds and probably able to advance the ball if Jared Davis doesn't make the hit. How is that a defenseless player when guys jump up on the sideline to make these catches all the time?
That one I didn't know either. Honestly, both of those things are very puzzling because I don't know what the hell they were trying to interpret. Remind me, is this the same game that Killebrew took someone's mask off or their helmet off in the game too?
Yeah.
Yeah, Miles Sanders died.
Well, then there's the reasons for all of this. If they're not going to call that, I don't expect them to get the other ones right either. Because I didn't know what I was watching. It was frustrating because that's like, those are key moments to close out a game and we're getting called for stuff. You know, I don't know. I'm just happy I don't have that job because I don't need that on my head at all.
Russ, if there's anything you can add to that to enlighten me, I'd be very happy to hear it, because I have no idea how they can call that.
Yeah, so the gray area in it is, while a receiver is catching the ball, you can't make contact with the head, especially with your own helmet. Yes, there's some things in, he's moving, Aaron Sproles is vertically challenged, right, so it changes a lot of angles there, so it's kind of tough, but I think that's really what they got him on is, well, you can't hit a guy in the head, and they had to call him for something for that. But it's tough. It's tough, especially when it's bang-bang like that.
Yeah, it's I don't know how to explain it. It doesn't make sense as a call, and I mean... Did their helmets knock? Yes, but I think you can make an argument that in almost every single play, someone's helmet hits someone. Like, it's tough. And
yeah, more than likely.
He was already in the tackling form while Sproles is coming down. So, really, it could have been a much worse hit. I mean, if he's coming a little hotter, he could have taken Sproles' legs out entirely. To me, if you watch it back, and again, you have to watch it back in frame by frame because that's how the refs are looking at it. To me, it looked like a good hit. Sproles' head comes down and hits Jared Davis's. There's where you get it. But at the same time, what is the alternative? Davis is supposed to hold up, let Sproles come down, because I'm sorry, I like Jared Davis. Darren Sproles is a lot faster than Jared Davis. If Sproles gets down, it's going to be a little harder for Davis to get his hands on him. So what's he supposed to do? Say, oh, let me wait for you to catch this ball, get secure, feel comfortable with yourself, and then I'm going to wreck you. It just doesn't make sense. Especially since if Jared Davis gets a hold of him, he can tackle him out of bounds. And by the NFL's rules, that's not a catch. You're out of bounds. Doesn't matter what the defender did to you. So I just feel like it was a play to kind of be like, you know what? Philadelphia's not having a great day. Let's give him a call and make him feel a little bit better. So I just was not a fan of the call and how it went.
Oop. Yeah, there was a lot of ugly calls in that game.
Yeah.
I'm just glad Miles Sanders is alive.
That's true. I even tweeted that out. I'm a Lions fan, but that was something that needed to be called.
That was egregious.
It was rough. Unfortunately, I don't know why I can't find it anywhere. Where they were, but they were definitely in goal line situation. They were pretty close to the end zone when it happened. So it's just weird. It was a weird call. I don't understand how you don't lead that off with being a pass interference. So it's just
the fantasy gods don't want me to have a touchdown from my tight end ever.
I guess not.
You poor thing.
I got back-to-back zeros in that department over 2 weeks. I'm sorry.
Yeah. Third and goal. Yeah, see, according to this, it says the penalty was on Spence for defensive offsides, but, yeah, I don't know. They don't have it listed.
Interesting.
So, and it was a couple weird calls. My last thing before I want to talk about the game this week. My last thing, and this is me just watching and kind of my impression of it, but as I watch Stafford, obviously 200 passing yards means he didn't really have a big day like he would normally do. And I believe I was one of the guys that said he had to throw it for well over 300 for them to have a chance. But it looked to me like he was just kind of never comfortable. He seemed to be rushing some throws that were wide open. I don't know how many times I saw him skip the ball to the receiver, and that isn't usually a Matt Stafford thing. If anything, he seems to keep the ball a little high on guys. So I just feel like this was a game where Stafford really never got settled in a game where he didn't need to rush how he ended up rushing. I don't know if you guys saw that, feel the same way. It just didn't seem like a Matt Stafford game, the Matt Stafford we're accustomed to.
No, I don't think it was. And if you take away the fumbles, the drops, Lions aren't winning the field position battle because, yeah, he didn't look settled and they were not moving the ball especially well.
No.
They just happened to have the Eagles team shooting themselves in the foot so much that they started in good position. It's easier to score when you have to go half the distance.
Oh, yeah. Two offensive fumbles, three offensive pass interference. That's something I don't know that I've ever seen before. But it at the end of the day, like we say, it's a W. At the end of the day, it doesn't matter. It says W on the record sheet, and I'm good with it. Now let's go over to the next game where I don't think any of us are going to be able to say it's going to say W on the record sheet, because this is going to be a very, very tough game. I think the only thing, as of updated 2 days ago, I think the only thing that bodes well for us is Kansas City's left tackle, Eric Fisher, he's out. Tyreek Hill, he's out. That doesn't mean they don't have abundance of talent, and I don't know if anybody's heard of him. His name's Travis Kelce. He's pretty good.
Okay, I guess.
This is going to be a tough one. Lions at home. It's nice. They get to play this one in Ford Field. They are not the favorites here. Kansas City, 70% favorite. Spread
really?
Six. Yeah, spread 6.5. Yeah, that's not really a surprise. Spread 6.5, and over-under is 54. So they expect at least one of these teams to put up quite a few points. Jay, I'll let you go first here. As you look at this one, it's a couple pretty simple questions. What do the Lions got to do to not only hang in this game, but maybe come away with the win? And two, how do you have this game shaken out? What do you got as a score?
God damn. Well, if I could get this right, man, I could do anything.
Yeah,
for us to win, I mean, at a minimum, keeping up with our consistency of having one guy be the feature, but we're going to have like two guys be the feature. And what I mean by feature is in a touchdown, 100 per all-purpose yards. So if we're keying up Hockenson, we're going to need to have like Kerryon also doing the same thing. We're going to have to play a flawless game at home. I don't think they do that. I don't know if anyone's even expecting us to do that, which might work in our favor. So we'll lose. Honestly, I don't even have a score. And I think it's okay to not have a score against this game because we're just going to lose. Like, straight up, team for team, we're going to lose. I imagine we'll get beaten by at least 30 points. I hope it's not that bad because that means it looks just as bad as Michigan did against Wisconsin, and no one will enjoy that. So I hope we keep it close. I hope we do something good, but it's going to be a miracle for anything noteworthy to come out of it. I got to go with the reality of what is probably going to happen.
Okay. So you have them losing by 30 points.
Yeah.
I hate you.
I hate me too.
Why are you
trust me?
Yeah. It's not good. Not good. All right. Well, Rusty, hopefully you can shine some light into this because that was depressing.
Well, it'll be brighter than that anyway. put it this way. 13 times these teams have played each other. Lions have only won 5 of them. They've gone over the over-under all but 3, including every single time since 1988. So longer than I've been alive, they've been going the over against the Chiefs. So take the over. Whatever it is, take the over. Do we know what the over-under is?
Over-under is 54.5.
I will have to update my score because take the over.
Yeah.
There we go. Updated. going through it a little bit more, kind of towards the score here. Mahomes has 20 starts, right? Played in 20 games, started 20 games. Kansas City has not scored less than 27 points but once in that entire spread. And they scored 26 that game. So there's the bar, right? You're going to have to at least get to 27. Okay, we have Lions have 2 of those this year. Last year they averaged 20.25 points per game. That's not good.
No.
This is not a team accustomed to scoring that often, that much, right? They've been tiptoeing up to the 27. And they've needed a lot of help the 2 games that they've done it. Sure, Kansas City's their rush defense is bad. The Lions have shown no propensity to be able to rush the ball. So that's my key. The best Mahomes against the Lions is the Mahomes on the sideline. Control the ball. Kerryon's got to be your key. You're over 100, or your 100-yard guy, but it's got to be on the ground so that Mahomes can only get to that 27, right? If he's getting to 34, 38, 40, you don't have the horses, right? This offense is just take what they give us, and they're not dictating play. That's what they have to do and eke out a close one. I don't think it'll happen. Missing Slay hurts a lot. I'm expecting him to be out right now, but hey, we'll see. At best, he's hurt, and that's just as scary practically. I'll go 34-24 Chiefs. It was fun being undefeated.
Yeah, it's not something we're accustomed to. My notes were pretty similar to Russ's. I think, like you said, the best Mahomes is a Mahomes that's on the sideline. And I think that's what they're going to have to do. That being said, I don't know that... I think Kerryon is definitely a feature in this. Kerryon's a feature every week for us. But I will say what I need more than anything is I need a methodical offense that is efficient. I don't care if your drive is 2 minutes or 22 minutes. You need to be effective with the ball. There can't be a lot of mistakes. You can't put yourself in third and long situations. Give me the most boring offense on the planet. Give me run, short pass, run, converting for first down, then do it all over again. That's fine. I don't need to see some high-flying, throwing Kenny Golladay these deep balls left and right. I don't need to see these screens because the Lions have proven, no matter who their offensive coordinator is, we don't know how to run screens. It doesn't work. We'll never be good at them. Just take them out of the playbook. You need
to get rid of all those screens, please.
Yeah, we don't need them. I'm starting to wonder if it's Stafford. I don't know if Stafford knows how to execute a screen. He's had a very hard time with them in his career. He's just never been good at them, and they never seem to work. So I would say that, yes, 30 points is something you need to achieve, and that'll be very hard for them to do. Getting on the other side of the ball, Mahomes has proven he's a mobile guy. He can move around. He's not Mike Vick. He's not one of those guys, but he can buy you the time. So a lot of this is going to be on that secondary. Slay, if you can play, we need you to be the very best Slay you've ever been. That goes for Coleman as well. Coleman needs to step up and play well. It wouldn't surprise me if Coleman's going to have to become an every down corner on this in this game. And that defensive front, I had it in my notes for the Philly game. They're showing signs of being a good defensive line that can definitely get pressure on the quarterback. You got a real opportunity here. One of their best offensive linemen isn't playing. One of his biggest weapons isn't playing. They need to get in his face. Needs to be very quick. You cannot give him enough time to sit back there because he has the arm to put it anywhere on the field, no matter where he is. This defensive front needs to kill him, and it needs to be one of those very slow, boring, methodical kind of games for the Lions where you don't give him enough opportunities. You know he's probably good for two touchdowns through the air at least. So nothing else can happen. You cannot let that run game be effective. It has to be the most, honestly, you're talking about Kansas City. It has to be the most boring football game you've ever seen, because without it, we're losing this game, like Jay said, by 30. I have it being a 28. I can't believe I'm saying this. This is going to, I have it being a 28-24 Lions victory. Yeah, I have it being.
You're going for broke this weekend.
Yeah, I do. I'm swinging for the fences here. I have it being a victory. I just think this defensive line and this defensive front as a whole is playing good. Have we gotten lucky? Yes, we've gotten some very lucky turns of event. The fact that Keenan Allen didn't have 150 receiving yards on us a couple weeks ago, that's one of them. The fact that no one on Philadelphia's offense could figure out how to hold on to the ball or not commit penalties while trying to get the ball. And the fact that that two-headed monster of Howard and Sanders didn't, you know, set the rushing record against us. These are all things that any other Lions team would have had happen. It would have been a bloodbath by halftime. But somehow the Lions are finding ways to stay in games, keep these other teams out of it. I mean, could any of you guys honestly say 2 years ago that you would have thought after playing Phillip Rivers and Carson Wentz that we would be 2-0? No Lions team could have done that. No Lions team could stop Keenan Allen, Phillip Rivers, all these guys. No one. No Lions team could have done that.
Hell, I'll do you one better. In the preseason, I thought if we went into the bye 2-2, we'd be okay.
Mm-hmm.
And now worse, it's going to be 2-1-1.
Yeah. And then a lot of people forget that tie was a bad one. It never should have happened. We should, in theory, be 3-0 right now, but we had a collapse. That happens. But of those three, we looked at that schedule, and of those three, we said Philly, Chargers, Kansas City was going to be ungodly, and we fully expected it to be an 0-3 kind of thing. But the fact of the matter is, we have a chance to get out of it 3-0 or 2-1. 2-1 is still great, but I think for this Lions team to keep trending in the direction we want them to, you're doing something right now. Whatever it is, I don't know. I really don't know. Maybe these guys are just buying into this Patricia belief system of our defense is that good, we can do it. I don't know what it is, but and as we've said a couple times, it's also amazing the fact that Bevel seems to be playing hot hands. So you really can't, you can scout as much as you want, but you don't know who Bevel's looking at. You really don't know. Is today going to be Galladay day? Is it going to be Hockenson? Is it going to be Kerryon? Is it going to be Amendola? You know, is it Marvin again? You can go to the same guy twice. So it's a little tougher to know who's that number one guy for us, because Bevel appears to have created an offense where any guy could be the number one guy on that day. It just depends on the matchup. So it is kind of that question mark offense right now. So the Lions have something going. I'm not sitting here saying that the Lions have a Super Bowl caliber team going right now, but I'm saying they have a team that isn't necessarily going to be a disappointment at the end of the year. I'm giving us a fair shake to maybe get to the playoffs. That NFC, this NFC North is kind of a question mark right now. One week it's a good conference the other week. You watch these two teams play each other, and they look terrible against each other. So I don't know, but they have something going, and this is the game where they can really prove it. You go out there and you hang in for four quarters against the best, probably one of the best offenses in the NFL, against one of the best young quarterbacks, against, I've said a million times, the best tight end in the league. Ertz is playing great for Philly. Travis Kelce's the best. It's not close, mm-hmm. in my opinion. So you go in and you hang in for four quarters against this team, and you come out on top. I don't know how you can have any more confidence than that. So I'm picking it as it's a risk. It is really a risk. But I'm picking a 28-24 just for the fact that I really do believe they've tapped into something, and if they can hold on to it, ooh boy, is this going to be fun to watch. I hope it's the most boring game on earth and there's a W at the end, but I just don't want to see this get into a Stafford-Mahomes shootout, because while I think it'd be great, I just don't know that Stafford has that ability anymore to be Mr. Gunslinger. Over the last couple of years, he seemed to try to rein it in a little bit more, and he just isn't that guy. Mahomes is still young and naive. He'll chuck it anywhere he wants to chuck it. So, we'll see. But yeah, I have 28-24, Kansas City.
Okay.
I mean, Detroit.
Calling for Mahomes' lowest point total of his career to date, and the first time going under the over-under since 88.
Yeah.
All right.
Had to happen at some point. Had to happen at some point.
That's a good point.
Let's do it.
So, we'll see. I mean, like you said, it's the lowest ever, but it had to happen at some point, and is there really a better defensive line to be able to pull it off? I mean, if they can get to him, they can make it a rough day for him.
I think that's what they're going to have to do.
Absolutely, that's what they're going to have to do. So we'll see what happens. It should be interesting. Let's move on. We're going to do our plays of the week. I'm not going to lie. This was a hard week for me to find something because there wasn't as much of a big play kind of week. I mean, I wanted it to be Leonard Fournette with a big run, but he didn't do anything else after that, so it's kind of a little hard to do. So
didn't do anything before it either.
Didn't do anything before it either. I chose to just kind of stay home. Jamal Agnew, 100-yard kick return, first play for us on offense. He's first guy to do it this year. Take one back to the house off a kick return. So why not? First guy to do it this year. First time it's been done this year, it's the biggest play so far. So mine is Agnew, 100-yard kick return against Philly in Philly on the very first play, and it sounded a little something like
that. And this should be returnable. Agnew to his right, takes it a yard deep, coming out. Back to the 5, cutting left at the 10. Jamal straightens up at the 15, gets to the 20, gets to the left side at the 25 and the 30. Got a man to beat at the 40, into Eagles territory, 35. He could go! Jamal to the house! 10-5, end zone! Touchdown! That's the way you bounce back, 3-9. That's the way you bounce back. What a return for Jamal Agnew and a big-time block to help him from J.D. McKissick.
Gotta love it. Gotta love it. My thanks to Dan Miller. Another great call. Danny does great for me. I asked Dan to give me good calls, and he gives me good calls. So I got a shout-out to him and WJR. Russ, over to you now. We just talked about a quarterback and buying into the hype. You're buying into the hype of another quarterback, Daniel Jones. Makes his first start this past week against Tampa Bay. Has a decent play. Why don't you tell me, why is this your play of the week?
Well, let's start off with, I'm not buying the hype on Daniel Jones. And I want to make that clear. However, that's exactly the point. Down 18, down Saquon Barkley, the unquestioned best player on that roster.
Mm-hmm.
And they come back and win a buck 16 left, Daniel Jones scrambles up the middle and scores. And suddenly everyone forgets that last week everyone was laughing at the Giants, including Giants fans, for drafting Daniel Jones in the top 10. It's been one game, people. But that's how important of a play this was. That's how big of a play it was that everyone has forgotten since. They've lost their damn minds over one play. Essentially. So yeah, it was good. It was exciting. And whew, it's going to look ugly in a couple weeks when reality sets in.
Yes, it is. Oh, absolutely. Yes, it is. But for right now, Daniel Jones looks a little something like this.
On 4th and 5, Jones steps up, takes off. He's in. Touchdown. Touchdown.
That's the danger of a running quarterback.
Yeah, you got to love New York. You got to love New York. They are the most volatile fan base I've ever seen. They're already ready to just appoint this guy, anoint this guy, the next big thing in New York. And he had one good week. You know what's going to happen in 2 weeks when he has three interceptions? They're going to ask that he be traded immediately because that's how it is in New York. Jay, I want to get to yours, but something got brought up yesterday, and this is a real quick yes or no answer here. Mike Greeney on ESPN was asked the question, is Eli Manning a Hall of Famer? If he doesn't play again, is Eli Manning a Hall of Famer? And Russ, I want to ask you that question. If he doesn't play another down of football, it's the Daniel Jones show from here on out. Is Eli Manning a Hall of Fame quarterback?
No.
Okay.
And I think if his last name wasn't Manning, we wouldn't even be asking this question.
Well, but you got to do the thing. Two Super Bowls.
Yep.
Be it what they were. Two Super Bowls. He's won.
Got one of those too.
He's won quite a few playoff games on the road, something very few guys have done. I saw the names mentioned. He's got more road playoff wins than Manning, than Brady does. He's got more than his brother does. He's one of only.
That means he had to play on the road in the playoffs more, though.
I understand. But we're talking about individual here. This isn't the Giants as a whole, but I'm just saying he's got more of those. He's one of only a few guys to have 55,000 passing yards. He's a good football player. But again,
he also led the league in interceptions 3 years.
He's 116 and 116 as an overall record. He's a 500 quarterback. And again, you made the best point. His last name is Manning. So is he a Hall of Famer or not? You say no, and I'm inclined to agree with you. I think that last name is what's going to get him into the Hall of Fame. But I think the cases can be made both ways. But I think if his last name was Eli Johnson or Eli Smith, he's probably not a Hall of Famer. But because his name is Eli Manning, he's going to get that nod in Canton. And again, he's going to go down as the guy that pulled off two of the most miraculous Super Bowl wins of all time against teams that, you know, Tom Brady should have two hands full of Super Bowl rings right now, but he doesn't, partly because of Eli Manning. So, Jay, I'm sorry, what was that?
No, just that one of those miraculous catches that helped one of those wins wouldn't have been the case if it was a well-thrown ball.
No, wouldn't have all. It would have been an interception. So, okay, that's fair. Jay, two things for you. Is Eli Manning a Hall of Famer? And then, because I can't sell it, you picked a miraculous play that even I can't sell. I'm going to let you sell your play as well. Eli Manning, Hall of Famer, and then give me your play of the week.
No, he's a perfectly average mouth-breathing quarterback who will not make the Hall of Fame. So
okay.
I'm good. We already got one. You know, we've got two Mannings in there, I'd imagine, right?
Oh, yeah. Peyton will be in about 3 years.
Yeah.
He's been out of the league for like 2 or 3 years. So, yeah, Peyton will be
in
about
3 years.
No,
that's enough. That's enough Mannings. All right, on to things that actually are amazing outside of Eli breathing through his mouth.
Mm-hmm.
My play of the week, Danny Trevathan, has a move called the coffee house. And when you are on the defensive line and you have a signature move that showed itself the other day, it's beautiful. He just a couple steps. Oh, what's that, a bird? Nope, that's me sacking the quarterback who you're supposed to be protecting right now, right tackle. I loved every second of it. And I want to see more of this, and I will continue to just do solo tackles for my plays of the week if they keep happening. And they're named Coffee House.
All right, well, here it is. Danny Trevathan doing the Coffee House.
Keenum taken down yet again. This time it's Danny Trevathan.
Let's watch number 59 here, Danny Trevathan with the okey-doke. He lines up out there, he rushes, and he does a dead leg. He acts as if he's looking the other way. The guard goes that way. He says, you know what? No, I'm going. Oh.
Yeah, that's a fun play. It's definitely cool to see. Those are our plays of the week. We're going to do it the same way we always do. Put it up on Twitter. Take a vote. I don't want to make a big deal about it, but somebody won last week. I don't know who it was. It wasn't Russ. Just putting that out there. Someone won last week.
You hurt your elbow patting yourself on the back.
I did just hurt my elbow patting myself on the back. I'm not as flexible as I used to be, and I might have to start using my notepad to pat me on the back. So, yeah. But we got three good plays this week. These are three real good plays. So, it's anyone's game. Me. And we'll see what happens with it. Go to Twitter when we put it up. Probably be up sometime tomorrow. Put in the votes. If you don't like what we did, give us the play that was better than that. We'd be happy to talk about it and see if we agree with you. I think my play is the best, so I'm not going to agree with you, but you can still comment anyway. Moving on, got a little thing going here. Been doing the same thing the last couple weeks, and I don't like to break habits. So we're on to our plays of the – or, I mean, not plays of the week, our games of the week. This is one that is a little tough for me because I had one circled, ready to go, and it wasn't because I thought it was going to be the most entertaining. It was more because I thought it was going to be our first chance to see two of the quarterbacks drafted in this draft play against each other as the Giants play the Redskins. But then you find out Case Keenum's practicing. He's probably going to play in the game. So that goes away, and then you kind of got to wonder, what's a good game? And to be honest, for lack of there being much else out there this week, if you guys found one, I applaud you, but I'm going to have to say the game of the week is actually our game. That, to me, has the potential to be the most offense, most good football we're going to see this week, so I'm going to go with the Chiefs-Lions as the game of the week. So, Russ, I'll if you found something better, I can't wait to hear it.
Better? I don't know, but different. The only other game this week that is a matchup of two undefeated teams, I went with the Pats and the Bills. Pats still haven't given up an offensive touchdown to their opponents. Can Josh Allen come in and somehow do that? They're in Buffalo. That place is going to be an absolute madhouse, just drunk on the euphoria of being 3-0 against teams that are a collective 1-5. The crushing defeat will only be matched by the crushing number of tables crushed.
Yeah.
And I'm here for it. It's going to be fun. Brady is 30-3 all time against the Bills. Oh, boy. 31-3 coming up. Might be the score, too.
It's very possible. It's very possible. I love watching these guys break tables. There's nothing, I mean, it's more entertaining than what they're putting out on the field, to be honest. So it should be fun. Should be cool to see. I wanted to go with that one, but the Patriots are just steamrolling so much right now that I as much fun as it is to see Brady keep going and play the way he is, I'd like it to at least see a little bit of challenge. Some team at least go give him a little bit of a run for their money, and I just don't think the Bills are the team to do that. So we'll see what happens there. Jay, what about you? What's the game that's going to grab your attention the most?
I almost don't want to go because I love how Russ just sold me Bill's pad.
Mm-hmm.
But if I'm going to put anything down, it's actually going to be tonight between Green Bay and Philly. I need to see if Green Bay is going to be the real deal and if Philly's going to rebound from their blunder on the weekend. If Green Bay quickly gets to 4-0 and they're going to be one of the potential 4-5 undefeated teams by Monday, they're 4-0 before the Lions have even touched the division yet.
Mm-hmm.
And that's scary as hell for me. So I'm really rooting for the Birds tonight. I hope that Alshon shows up healthy and does what he has to do, because if the Packers are going to be 4-0 before we even get to any of the NFC North, that's already a tough hill to get up on. So I'm going to go with Green Bay, Philly, but I do want to break a table, so Bill sounds enticing.
Okay. Jay, one more thing, because you chose this game. How many times do you expect them to mention this Aguilar guy catching babies thing? In the broadcast tonight?
At least twice, but he got interviewed again, and there's actually video footage of him catching the kid now.
So, yeah, amazing thing. If you haven't seen it, guy apparently at a fire, one of his friends was tossing babies out the window, and he was catching them.
As you do.
That's you got to make plays. When plays need to be made, you make the plays. And he chose to, in that interview, comment the fact that he's a little bit better at catching things than Aguilar was earlier that day, and it was amazing. Got to check it out.
Did you see what Aguilar responded with on Twitter?
I did not.
He invited them to a Philly game. He said, "Help me." He said, "Twitter, help me get in touch with this man so I can invite him to the next game."
There you go.
Taking the high road.
All right. Well, that's it for the usual stuff. We got a little bit of time left, so real quick. It's coming quick, and we definitely want to gear up for it. So, Jay, I know you're excited. You're always excited when I mention this. Hockey's back. and we're going to get to see some Red Wing hockey. We're going to get to but even more, we're going to get to see some Steve Yzerman Red Wing hockey. Something we've been deprived. Oh gosh. So when I say these things, when I bring this up, it's tough because the Wings have been down the last couple of years. And again, first thing he said in his press conference, this is gonna take time. So as excited as we are, as ready as we are, we also have to hold back expectations a little bit because this isn't like it's going to be an overnight turnaround and all of a sudden, you know, we're going to win more games than anyone else. We're going to win a cup. This is still going to be a middle-of-the-road team probably this year, but I expect to see some improvements. When you look at this team, when you see the roster they're presenting, when you see what they did in the draft, take away the fandom of it, what are you expecting out of this Detroit Red Wings team this year, Jay?
So I try to bottom line it because I can talk about every single guy in this team and what I want to see and what I don't want to see. But like as a whole, I firmly believe that this year is a prove it year because our actual future is most likely going to be in Grand Rapids. And the guys that are suiting up this year, for the most part, are the depth. And these depth guys have to cement themselves. We have seven guys on the team that are going to be RFAs next year. And I do expect most of them not to come back, or if we even tender them an offer. Russ has all the logistics on how that works. Regardless, I look at the name and I know what they do and don't do, and I want them gone however way they get out the door. So I think if anyone's going to stay between those seven RFAs, they're going to become the glue, you know, on the team. It's the depth. I know our future is in Grand Rapids. I need to see what depth is going to back them up when we get all the young kids up here, including the guys that we just drafted. So it's a prove it year, and I'm not expecting anything other than cementing everything up the middle.
Okay. Two other things I want to add to this, and then Russ, you're good at remembering things, so you can remember to answer all three of these.
So that's why I write it down.
Yeah, and Jay, but these are the two I wanted to ask you, and you started answering, which totally fine with. Thanks for interrupting me.
You got it, buddy.
Yeah. My other two things. One, we're gonna deep dive this, you know, in the upcoming weeks, in the weeks to come here. Give me a ballpark on record. I mean, it doesn't have to be adequate. Like, are you like 500, a little above, a little below? But the other thing I want to ask you is, if we're gonna break it down between the offense, the defense, and goalies, I want to ask you, of those three, which is the part that needs to have the most improvement from last year?
Record, I couldn't tell you off the top of my head number-wise. I'm still going to stick with what I said, that they'll make the playoffs. I also said the Oilers will make the playoffs, too. I'm going with those hot takes.
There you go.
But in terms of what needs to improve, I'm actually not looking at between the pipes because I don't think any of those goalies are going to help us out win a cup. Mm-hmm. We need to draft or acquire our next goaltender because we are highly invested on offense and defense. So I'm watching defense. I'm watching the likes of Hronek or there's another dude I watched in preseason. There's a couple guys that they have to become the next defenseman of this team. We can't ask everyone to come play for our team or draft everyone. We have to do some home cooking. So yeah. I need to see it on the defensive side this year.
Okay, that's fair. Russ, answer the nine questions I just asked. And in chronological order, please.
Yeah, if you'll give me a second, I'll just finish my dissertation real quick.
And I would appreciate if you'd answer alphabetically, please. I don't want any of this confusion.
Okay. Screw that. I'll start with the record. Yeah. Mid-30s to high-30s in wins is what I'm looking for. It's still going to be a below 500 team, I think. Some of the more reputable stat guys out there, like Michael Blake McCurdy and Don Lucician, have them as a top three chance for a number one pick this year. Kind of sounds about right. What I'm expecting from this team is to be in the running for a top 3 to 5 pick. But more than that, I expect to have a better nickname for this top line of Mantha, Larkin, and Bertuzzi. I mean, it's MLB. We got something to work with here. I expect to have a nickname out of that. Please? Ball club? I don't know. We'll workshop it. The group I need the most improvement from is the defensemen. And mainly because I think there's a lot of moving pieces there, right? There's a lot of young guys that could get some time up there. Justin talked about Hronek. Chalowski maybe could. But four of them are in contract years. Green, Erickson, Daly, and Bowie.
pretty sure at least two of them are not coming back and they're useless to come back. But three of those guys are also hurt right now.
Mm-hmm.
There's going to be some chances. The forwards are kind of jammed there where there's not going to be as much opportunity for the young guys. So it's 100% the defense. Show the young guys that they have a chance. Show that Hronik and Chalowski are ready to play in the NHL. Because, I mean, we can have Zadina, we can have Valeno, we can have Rasmussen come up next year, but if there's not a back end to help them out, it's not going to do a whole lot, and we're going to be looking at a top five pick to pick at the year after that, too.
Yeah,
it's it'll be interesting. There's some interesting pieces. I love that Justin mentioned Hirose. I can't wait to watch him on the power play. But I have no idea what this blue line is, and I'd love to know something besides that.
Yeah. Record, I'm going to, again, we're all guesstimating here. There's not really, we haven't really deep dived and thought about it too much. I'm going to say right around 500. I'm going to put them right at about a 500 team this year. Maybe a little over. It's just going to depend on a couple certain players working out a little more than we thought they would. As for what I'm looking for, the defense is an obvious. I mean, I don't think I could sum it up or give any more insight than you guys already have. But for me, I've kind of given up on the defense really turning around in the next year or two. I think it's going to take some time. So for me, I'm looking more on that offensive side, but I'm looking more for there are a couple guys, i.e. that first line you mentioned, that I want to see some real next step leadership from these guys. You want to be the number one line. You want to be the go-to guys that we're drawing up the plays for, that we're expecting a lot out of. You want that C, Dylan? I need to see it on the ice. I need to see you go out there, take control of these games, and lead by example. It doesn't mean anything to me if you're barking on the bench or in the locker room, but when we get out there, you're kind of lost in the shuffle. So I need to see the leadership. I need to see those next three big names for this team emerge and separate themselves so that we know what the direction is, so that when we have these young guys come into the locker room, they know this is the leader in the locker room. You listen to him. You follow suit, and we're going to go in that direction. We're going to go the way they take him. No one, like, all these young guys came in for years. No one questions Steve Yzerman. This is Steve's locker room. What he says goes. We need that guy, and we don't have that guy right now. We have guys that want to be that guy. It's one thing to say, I want to be a leader. It's one thing to say I want to be a leader. It's another thing to actually be that leader. So I need to see that. The defense isn't obvious, but I think leadership on that offensive side, because that's where we're going to live or die by. Defense, we're probably going to give up a lot of goals, but we need to be able to score a lot of goals, and we need the guys that are going to set that example. So I'm going to go with offensive leadership is what I'm looking for.
It would be nice to see any of these things.
It would be lovely to see any of these things. And of course, like I said, we're going to do the deep dive. We're going to look at this schedule. We're going to look at this team. We're going to go over it all. I mean, we just got to find the time. There's football's back, so it's tough to, you know, chunk off a decent amount of time to say that's what we're going to do. But we'll get there. We'll go over it. We got a little bit of time, and I just know we're all excited for NHL hockey to be back. I'm more excited because it's the most math I ever hear Russ do, because he just has stats on stats on stats on stats for us, and it's great. So, yeah, that's going to do it for us. Another great show. Lot we covered. I've got a lot of bold predictions out there that I'm very much regretting making. And I have a feeling I'm going to get a big, big amount of I told you so on next week's show from Justin. I just can see it coming. I think it's going to be rough. That being said, I have to thank Justin Marcus for being here, buddy. You're the Mr. Hot Take. You give us all the salt we need. And I'm going to enjoy watching your Spartans be just like us, mediocre.
Awesome. Yeah, great. I'm happy to hear. I'm happy I wasn't the person who said the craziest thing today, because you're taking the Lions to win. So it's a good day.
Oh, good. Russ Ivanek, you're smart. You make us sound a lot smarter than we really are. Today, your smartness didn't rub off on me because I said some stupid stuff.
Yeah, you know what? I'm not a miracle worker. What can you do?
Figure out a way to become a miracle worker. That's what I'm saying. You do all this math. Mathematically figure out how to be a miracle worker.
Yeah. So some things can't be solved by math.
That's true.
Yeah. But it was fun. All the same.
Always a good time. And as always, I'm your host, Eric Dorsch. That's one small step for us, one giant leap back in Detroit sports broadcast.
What you just said is one of the most insanely idiotic things I have ever heard. At no point in your rambling, incoherent response were you even close to anything that could be considered a rational thought. Everyone in this room is now dumber for having listened to it. May God have mercy on your soul.